Today we begin the chapter on the divine abidings, chapter 9, Brahma Vihara. We may expect the commentator to give us the meaning or the definition of the word Brahma Vihara, and then of the words metta and so on. So it should be done that way, but he gives the definition or meanings only towards the end of the chapter. So first let's go to the explanation of the word Brahma Vihara. That is on page 347. Paragraph 105. And here it may be asked, but why are loving kindness, compassion, gladness, and equanimity called divine abidings? And why are they only four, and what is their order? And why are they called measureless states in the Abhidhamma? So it may be replied, the divineness of the abiding should be understood here in the sense of best and in the sense of immaculate. Now, you look at the word, the Pali word Brahma and Vihara. Brahma can mean the best or immaculate. Now, when you see the word Brahma, the first meaning that comes to your mind is a being, a kind of higher celestial being called Brahma. And Brahma beings are better than or higher than the beings belonging to the sense sphere or belonging to the world of human beings and lower celestial beings. So the word Brahma came to mean good or the best, and also the immaculate or pure. And these abidings are the best in being the right attitude towards beings. So these abidings are actually these practices of meditation are the best because they are the right attitude towards being, loving kindness, compassion, and so on. And just as Brahma gods abide with immaculate minds, so the meditators who associate themselves with these abidings abide on an equal footing with Brahma gods. Another explanation is Brahma Vihara means Vihara like that of Brahmas. Vihara means living or abiding. Abiding like that of Brahmas. It is said that the Brahmas in their world just practice these four kinds of meditation. That there is nothing for them to do than the practice of or going into the jhanas, practicing these four kinds of meditation. So Brahma Vihara means the abiding of the Brahma gods. So they are called divine abidings in the sense of best and in the sense of immaculate. So we can explain it as the best way of abiding or the best way of living, or the living like that of the Brahmas. So they are translated as divine abidings, or sometimes they are called sublime states. You can give any name you like. And there are four kinds of, or four Brahma Viharas, four divine abidings. And they are first Mitta, loving kindness. Then second, Karuna, compassion. Third, Mudita, gladness. And fourth, Upeka, equanimity. So we'll be studying about Mitta today. So let's go to the explanation of Mitta on page 343. What is metta? What is loving kindness? So we should clearly understand what is meant by this word. Towards the bottom of the page, paragraph 92. Now, as to the meaning, firstly, of loving kindness, compassion, gladness, and equanimity, it fattens Thus it is loving kindness. Now mitta, the word mitta is derived from a Pali root. The Pali root is mitta, and it has a meaning of to fatten. Actually, here means to be moist or to be something like sticky. Because when you have love for someone, you are sort of attached to him or glued to him. So actually what is meant is, it is solvent is the meaning. So it is moist, it is glutinous. That is why it is called mitta. That is one explanation. Another explanation is, also it comes about with respect to a friend. A friend is called mitta, M-I-T-T-A in Pali. And the state of a friend, or the behavior of a friend, is called mitta, M-E-T-T-A. That is according to Pali grammatical rules. So in this second explanation, the word mitta comes from the word mitta, M-I-T-T-A, which means a friend. So it's the behavior of a friend, or behavior towards a friend, is called mitta. Now, what is mitta? It's a kind of love, but it is not mixed with attachment or craving. It is pure, wholesome desire for the well-being of beings, for the welfare of beings. If you have studied Abhidhamma, you will know that there are 52 mental factors, or 52 chetasikas. Among them, metta is nothing but adosa. So adosa means non-hatred or non-anger. So metta is the opposite of anger or opposite of hatred. So it is the wholesome desire for the welfare or well-being of all beings. So now we can go to the beginning of the chapter. So when we want to practice metta meditation, loving kindness meditation, what we must do first is to review the danger in hate and to review the advantage in patience. That is, before we do something, we must know the danger of the opposite of what we are going to do, and also the benefits of the thing we are going to do. So first, to review the danger in hate. So when we see the danger in hate or anger, we will want to avoid, we will want to get away from that hate or anger. So first, we should review the danger in hate or anger. And then we should review the advantage in patience, in being patient. Why? Because hate has to be abandoned, and patience attained in the development of this meditation subject. And he cannot abandon unseen dangers and attain unknown advantages. So if he does not see any danger, he cannot abandon them. And if he doesn't see any advantages, he will not attain them. So first, to see danger in hate and advantage in patience. And danger and hate should be seen in accordance with such suttas as this. So there are many suttas where Buddha taught about danger in hate and advantage in patience. So today we begin the chapter on the divine abidings. The Pali word for divine abidings is Brahma Vihara, and you will see the definition of that word towards the end of the chapter. And the word metta, or loving kindness, is defined as that which is moist, or which is glutinous. So it is metta, or loving kindness, is a wholesome desire for the well-being of all beings. Now, before we practice loving kindness meditation, this book said that we must do two things, and one is review the danger in hate, and the other is the advantage, to review the advantage in patience. If we do not see danger in hate, we will not be able to abandon hate, and if we do not see advantages in being patient, we will not get these advantages. So danger in hate and advantage in patience should be reviewed. And this we could do reading some suttas. So the first is the danger in hate. Friends, when a man hates, he is prey to hate and his mind is obsessed by hate. He kills living beings and so on. So when a man is angry, he may kill a being, or he may do something to injure some other person and so on. And so there is this danger in hate, or danger in anger. And there are many, many suttas similar to this sutta in the Sutta Pitaka. Now, the reference given here is A1216. Now, if you want to read the original suttas, I mean an English translation, I can give you the reference numbers of the English translations. Now, the A means Anguttara Nikaya. The translation of Anguttara Nikaya is named Gradual Sayings. So there are five books or five volumes in this collection. So the Gradual Sayings, Volume 1, page 196. So you may read there in more detail. And the advantage in patience should be understood according to such suttas as these. No higher rule, the Buddha say, than patience, and no nibbana higher than forbearance, and so on. And then patience in force, in strong array, 'tis him I call a Brahman. So here a Brahman means a holy man. So Buddha said, I call him a holy man who has patience as an army or as a force, and who is strong in forbearing. And no greater thing exists than patience, and so on. So these are from the other suttas. So by reviewing, I mean by reading these suttas, or by remembering them, we can see danger in hate and advantage in being patient. After reviewing danger in hate and the advantage in patience, what should we do? Thereupon, he should embark upon the development of loving kindness for the purpose of secluding the mind from hate, seen as a danger, and introducing it to patience, known as an advantage. But when he begins, he must know that some persons are not of the wrong sort at the very beginning, and that loving kindness should be developed towards certain kinds of persons and not towards certain other kinds at first. So when we practice loving kindness meditation, we must first understand to whom we must first practice loving kindness meditation. And in this book it is said that loving kindness should not be developed at first towards the following four kinds of persons. An antipathetic person, that means a person whom you hate, a very dearly loved friend, a neutral person, and a hostile person. Also, it should not be developed specifically towards the opposite sex or towards a dead person. So it will be explained later. Now, why should we not develop at first towards the antipathetic persons and others? That is, to put an antipathetic person in a dear one's place is fatiguing. It's very difficult. It is so we should not begin with such persons, and the other persons also. We should not radiate our thoughts of loving kindness to them in the beginning. And then towards the person of opposite sex, because lust can arise in persons who practice loving kindness towards persons of opposite sex. So it is not suitable to practice loving kindness towards persons of opposite sex in the beginning. Or maybe not practicing specifically to a person, but to all persons, let's say to all women, to all men, that we should do. Or if we can really keep ourselves from getting lustful thoughts or attachment, maybe we could do that. But it would be very difficult, especially in the beginning, to keep these thoughts from coming up in our minds. So it is best to avoid persons of opposite sex in the beginning. And then, towards a dead person, we can send thoughts to him, but we cannot get any jhanas from that practice. And a story of a young monk is given here. He was familiar with jhana through loving kindness. That means he had jhana through loving kindness meditation. He could enter into jhana easily. But when he practiced loving kindness towards his teacher and tried to enter into jhana, he could not do that. So he went to another elder and asked him why he could not do that. Because he said, I am familiar with the jhanas through loving kindness meditation, but now I practice loving kindness meditation to my teacher and I couldn't get into the jhana. And the elder said, what did the elder say?
Seek
the sign, friend, just that. Seek the sign. That means examine your object of your meditation. He did so. Finding that his teacher had died, he proceeded with developing loving kindness inspired by another and attained absorption. So he changed his object to another person who is living. So we cannot send thoughts of loving kindness to persons who are dead. At the same time, we don't know that they are dead. Now, what about your parents? Say your parents have died and you want to send thoughts to them. Is that possible? I think it is. Because I'm doing that. I sent out to them. Because I know they are dead. So I thought of them to be reborn in some other state, say a state among the devas or something, and then send thoughts to them. I mean, that way we can practice loving kindness to dead persons. But if you don't know that they are dead and you are sending thoughts to them as living persons, then it won't help.
Is there a difference between sending thoughts or goodwill and attaining jhana, though? Is that the difference, that you can you attain jhana when you send thoughts to your dead?
You attain jhana after you send thoughts. It will be explained here. In order to attain jhana, you have to practice seriously and try to break the barriers. And after the barriers are broken, you are said to get the excess concentration, and you dwell upon you continue practicing loving kindness, and you will get jhana.
Even if your thoughts are directed toward person who's dead?
Oh, no.
So that's the distinction that could be made here, is it says you can't attain jhana, but not that you can't send thoughts or contact somebody's there, but you can't attain jhana.
You can't attain jhana, but you can send thoughts to them, to those persons. Yes. So first of all, it should be developed only towards oneself, doing it repeatedly thus. So when we practice loving kindness, we begin with ourselves. And then there is this question and answer regarding whether practicing towards oneself is in accordance or in variance with the teachings in other books. Because in the texts, it is not said that you should first practice loving kindness towards yourself, and then if you practice to other beings. It is not expressly said. So it may seem to conflict with those texts, but the author said here it is not. It does not conflict. Because that refers to absorption. In the Pali text, when it is said in here that a monk dwell pervading one direction with his heart filled with loving kindness and so on, it means for jhana, for absorption. And this initial development towards oneself refers to making oneself an example. But the practicing towards ourselves is to make ourselves an example. I'm happy, and just as I want to be happy, just as I dread pain, just as I want to live and not to die, so do other beings. So may they also be happy, may they also live long, something like that. So in order to make ourselves example, we first practice loving kindness towards ourselves. And practicing loving kindness towards ourselves will not lead to any attainment of absorption, because it is said here, even you practice for 100 years or 1,000 years in this way, absorption would never arise. But it is best to begin with ourselves and then to practice to other beings. So in this, in the paragraph 10, therefore, even if he developed loving kindness for 100 or 1,000 years in this way, I am happy. Actually, it is not I am happy. May I be happy. So when you practice loving kindness to yourself, you say to yourself, or say you repeat it in your mind, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. In Pali, the Pali word for I am happy and may I be happy, not the same. In Pali, Ahang Aviro Homi. So Aviro Homi may mean I am happy or may I be happy. So here it means may I be happy. So when you practice loving kindness to yourself, you do not say I am happy, but you say may I be happy. So it is taking oneself as an example. I visited all quarters with my mind, but did not find any dearer than myself. Self is likewise to every other dear. Who loves himself should never harm another. Not will, but should. Who loves himself should never harm another. So when you look at all beings, there is no one dearer than yourself. And for other persons also the same. So if you love yourself, you do not harm others. So he should pervade himself with loving kindness. After that, in order to proceed easily, he can recollect such gifts, kind words, etc., as inspire love and endearment, such virtue, learning, etc., as inspire respect and reverence, met with any teacher or his equivalent or a preceptor or his equivalent, developing loving kindness towards him in a way beginning, may this good man be happy and free from suffering. Now, after practicing towards ourselves, then we practice towards a person. And that should be here because it is written for monks. So it should be a teacher or someone who is like a teacher or a preceptor or who is like a preceptor. That is why when I teach meditation, my sequence of sentences is, may I be well, happy and peaceful. May my teachers be well, happy and peaceful. Only after that, may my parents be well, happy and peaceful. Because for monks, for those who have left the home life, teachers come first, teachers before parents. Parents are left behind. But teachers are those who are like parents to a monk. So we put teachers before parents. But lay people may practice to parents first and then to teachers later. That doesn't matter. But here, to the teacher. Then after that, if this bhikkhu does not rest content with just that much, and wants to break down the barriers, he should next after that develop loving kindness towards a very dearly loved friend. So after practicing towards a revered teacher, then he practices towards a loved, very dearly loved friend. Then towards a neutral person. But here, as a very dearly loved friend is not correct. Nyanamori misunderstood some words here. So what is meant here is, then after the very dearly loved friend towards a neutral person, then after the neutral person towards a hostile person, like that. So first you practice towards very dearly loved friend, and when you have practiced for some time and you gain familiarity with practice, then you move to a neutral person. And then, after practicing towards a neutral person, you move towards a hostile person, if there is any. And when he does so, he should make his mind malleable and wieldy in each instance before passing on to the next. That means, not like we do every day. Yes. Now we do, may I be well, happy and peaceful, and then we say, may my friends be well, happy and peaceful. May the indifferent persons be well, happy and peaceful. May the unfriendly person, that means hostile persons, be well, happy and peaceful. We are doing in one sitting. But in fact, what we should do is, say, practice towards a dearly loved person for some days. And then towards a neutral person, and then towards a hostile person.
This then towards a neutral person, this then phrase as a very dearly loved friend.
No, that's not
that,
so.
That should be eliminated.
Your as a very dearly loved friend, that should go.
Okay.
And also, next sentence, then towards a hostile person as neutral. So as neutral should go.
I see.
But if you have no enemy, then you don't have to do that. So if he has no enemy, or he is of the type of a great man who does not perceive another as an enemy, even when the other does him harm, he should not interest himself as follows. Now that my consciousness of loving kindness has become wieldy towards a neutral person, I shall apply it to a hostile person. Because he has no hostile person, he has no enemies. And he should not find one and practice. Now, with regard to practicing towards a hostile person, we come into some problems here. So if resentment arises in him when he applies his mind to a hostile person, because he remembers wrongs done by that person, he should get rid of the resentment by entering repeatedly into loving-kindness jhana towards any of the first mentioned persons, and then after he has emerged each time, directing loving kindness towards that person. Now, these are the ways of getting rid of resentment. They are very, very good for getting rid of resentment. But this first way is something like strange. Don't you find it strange? We don't know how to practice loving kindness meditation. We are we are going to practice loving kindness meditation, and he is here instructing us to enter into jhana to get rid of resentment. we don't even practice loving kindness yet. So yeah, the author is saying you should go into jhana to get rid of resentment. I don't know why it is put at the beginning. Maybe you should go at at the end. So that is the first one. Then the next one, if it does not die out in spite of his efforts, then let him reflect upon the soul with other figures of such kind and strive repeatedly to leave resentment far behind. That means reflect upon the teachings of the simile of soul and other teachings, because there are teachings in the suttas. So he should admonish himself in this way. Now you who get angry, has not the blessed one said this? Bhikkhus, even if bandits brutally sever limb from limb with a two-handled sword, he who entertained hate in his heart on that account would not be one who carried out my teaching. So this, I always point out to this teaching. I think when Jesus said, give the other cheek, he was just echoing this piece of advice. He may have learned these teachings when he was in India, because many people now believe that during his lost years he was going in India and learning from the Buddhist monks there. And then the others. To repay angry men in kind is worse than to be angry first. Repay not angry men in kind and win a battle hard to win. I like this very much. The will of both he does promote, his own and then the others too. Who shall another's anger know and mindfully maintain his peace? So to repay angry men in kind is worse than to be angry first. Repay not angry men in kind and win a battle hard to win. So if somebody gets angry with you and you don't get angry, brag on yourself as having won a battle hard to win. And then the other sodas. Because there are seven things gratifying and helpful to an enemy that happen to one who is angry, and so on. I hope you have read all these. So there are some things which your enemy want you to be or not to be. And why not let them get their satisfaction by being angry with them? That is the gist of this. And then, as a log from a pyre, burnt at both ends and fault in the middle, serves neither for timber in the village nor for timber in the forest, so is such a person as this, I say. So a person who gets angry is like a stick used in cremating dead bodies. It cannot be used as timber in the village or in the forest. And if you are angry now, you will be one who does not carry out the Blessed One's teaching. By repaying an angry man in kind, you will be worse than the angry man and not win the battle hard to win. You will yourself do to yourself the things that help your enemy, and you will be like a pyre log. So this is the second method of getting rid of resentment. So this is reflecting upon the teachings of the Buddha with regard to resentment. Then the third one, if his resentment subsides when he strives and makes effort in this way, it is good. If not, then he should remove irritation by remembering some controlled and purified state in that person, which inspires confidence when remembered. So when you are angry with some person, try to see good things in him instead of seeing bad things in him. Because when we are angry with someone, we tend to see only the bad things in him. We don't want to see, or we refuse to see the good things in him. So here the advice is remember some controlled and purified state in that person. That means good things in him. And by reflecting on them, your resentment may disappear. And then the advice given here is, there are people who are controlled and purified as to their bodily actions, or to their verbal actions, or to their mental actions. And try to find whatever is good in him. It may be his bodily actions, or his speech, or his mind. Whatever is good in him, try to see it. And try to get rid of resentment. But there may be another in whom not even one of these three things is controlled. What about a person who has none of these? It is said that somebody may be good in his bodily behavior, but may be not good in speech. And there may be somebody who is controlled in his speech, but not in his bodily behavior and so on. But what if there is a person who has not even one of these three things? Then compassion for that person should be aroused thus. So here, instead of practicing Mitta, you practice compassion, Karuna, towards that person. Though he is going about in the human world now, nevertheless, after a certain number of years and days, he will find himself in one of the 8 great hells, or the 16 prominent hells, for irritation subsides too through compassion. So through compassion, resentment or irritation can subside. Then, what about a person who has all these three controlled states? Then he can remember any of the three in that person, whether he likes, whichever he likes. For the development of loving kindness towards such a person is easy. And in order to make the meaning of this clear, the following sutta from the Book of Five should be cited in full. So he wants us to read the sutta in full. So that is also Gradual Sayings, 3rd volume, page 137, and so on. Then the fourth method is to admonish yourself thus. Suppose an enemy has hurt you now in what is his domain. Why try yourself as well to hurt your mind that is not his domain? What is his domain?
Body, for instance. Hmm? He can hurt you
bodily. Yeah, yeah. So his domain means my body. So he has hurt me bodily. Why try yourself as well to hurt your mind? So you, when you get angry, your mind is also hurt. So why do you do that?
Think about what you can control. Like can maybe hurt your body, but your mind is your doing.
That's right. Yeah. In tears, you left your family. That is not so. You left your family who are in tears. That means you left them and they were crying when you left. Not that you left with tears.
Maybe both.
Oh, no. Because you have thought about it thoroughly and you have decided to leave them. So you do not feel any regret or what do you call sorrow in leaving them. But your parents or your family members may not want you to go forth, and so they may be crying. So in tears actually means your family and not you. You left your family, they had been kind and helpful too. So why not leave your enemy, the anger that brings harm to you? So you left your family who are kind to you. Why don't you leave your enemy that is not kind to you, that brings harm to you? This anger that you entertain is gnawing at the very roots of all the virtues that you got, who is there such a fool as you? Another does ignoble deeds, so you are angry. How is this? Do you then want to copy too the sort of acts that he commits? Suppose another to annoy provoke you with some odious act. Why suffer anger to spring up and do as he would have you do? If you get angry, then maybe you make him suffer, maybe not. Though with the hurt that anger brings, you suddenly are punished now. That means right now you inflict yourself with anger, which is suffering. If anger-blinded enemies set out to tread the path of war, do you by getting angry too intend to follow heel to toe? If hurt is done by you, done you by a foe because of anger on your part, then put your anger down, for why should you be harassed groundlessly? That means your anger is put on a wrong object. Now, if hurt is done you by a foe because of anger on your part, that really means because you are there, the other person can hurt you. So actually you are also the cause of his hurting you. Then put your anger down, for why should you be harassed groundlessly? Here means that you are vexed on a wrong object. You should be angry with yourself or something like that, because you are also the cause of this hurt that is done by another person. Since states last but a moment's time, those aggregates by which was done the odious act have ceased. So now what is it you are angry with? That is applying the law of impermanence here. Whom shall he hurt who seeks to hurt another in the other's absence? Your presence is the cause of hurt. Why are you angry then with him? So you yourself is the cause. And this is admonishing oneself with these reflections or considerations. Then the next one, the fifth one, is review the fact that he himself and the others are owners of their deeds. That means review the law of karma. What is the point of your getting angry with him? Will not this karma of yours, that is anger as it sows, lead to your own harm? For you are the owner of your deeds, heir of your deeds, and so on. So when you get angry, you have unwholesome mental states, or akusala, and this akusala will give you painful results, because beings are owner of their deeds and so on. And this is not the kind of deed to bring you to full enlightenment, to undeclared enlightenment. Undeclared enlightenment is the translation of Pachika Buddha, Pachika Bodhi.
Pachika?
Yes. Uh-huh. In Sanskrit, pratyeka. They are like, in some way like Buddhas, and in other ways like arahants. They stand between Buddhas and arahants. I mean, they are a step higher than the arahants, but lower than the Buddhas. And they are called, actually, now, the Buddha is called Sammabuddha. Samma means rightly, and Sam means by oneself, and Buddha means enlightenment.
How do you admonish yourself? Because it seems like if you are angry with yourself or with somebody, it creates problems, but still there needs to be some kind of control of what you're doing. So it says you should admonish himself.
Admonish, yeah.
What does that mean? How do you admonish?
The verses given are how you admonish yourself. That means you talk to yourself. You reflect upon the meanings of these. Say, I'm angry with him. Mm-hmm. But since I have anger in my mind, I am already hurt, or I'm hurting myself. So why should I get angry? Something like that. So talking to yourself. That is what is called, what is meant by admonition here. So, Paccika Buddha. The Pali word Paccika means separate. The separate Buddhas they are. They became Buddha without the help of any person. That is why they are called Sambuddha. So self-enlightened ones. But not they are not called Samma Sambuddha. Because they are not as great as the fully enlightened ones. So here it is translated as undeclared enlightenment. Maybe the word undeclared is used because Paccika Buddhas usually do not live among the, what you call, in the villages or in the cities. They are ones who wanted to be secluded and lived in the Himalayas. So they seldom visit, they seldom go to the places where human beings live. So that is why they are called undeclared undeclared Buddhas.
In the Mahayana, they don't have teachers, so
yeah.
Their teacher might declare someone as a teacher, but you're self-taught.